Good morning, and thanks everybody for joining us. My name is Brad Woodhouse. I'm the executive director of Protect Our Care, and I'm thrilled with the lineup we have today, and more importantly, the content of what we're gonna talk about. I think everybody is watching what's going on in Washington today. Hopefully, not everybody is watching it because there's a lot of sausage making going on. But we are so thrilled at what's coming together. I've watched this before. The congressman and the congresswoman have seen this before. We know that there's a path to get the Build Back Better agenda passed and signed into law. And the tip of the spear in that agenda, according to all the polling that's out there and the polling that we've conducted, are the healthcare elements. Those are the elements that the American people really want to see accomplished. They want the other things, and they're all popular, actually. The climate provisions, the child care provisions, the home care provisions. But health care is the top of the heap. And health care, as we know, helped usher in a Democratic majority in the House and helped maintain that majority in 2020, helped elect Joe Biden, and helped give us the United States Senate. And right now we have a once-in-a-generation opportunity to get a tremendous amount done for the American people. And two really big buckets that are related to the Affordable Care Act, which we have worked so hard to defend and prevent from repeal and to enhance and get people enrolled, relate to closing the Medicaid coverage gap. This is the gap these dozen states that either have Republican governors or Republican legislatures or both, and just for sheer politics, for their hatred of the Affordable Care Act and the previous President Obama, who signed that into law, they will not extend, even with the incentives passed in the American Rescue Plan, will not extend that coverage to the working poor. 12 states of this cohort of people are left out of coverage. It's immoral. And 60% of those people are people of color. And there's almost nothing that we can do more quickly to reduce inequity in healthcare, racial inequity in healthcare, than to close that Medicaid's coverage gap. And the other, of course, is extending the premium subsidies, which were enhanced and expanded to provide more affordable healthcare to more people on the exchanges. This is an issue that Congresswoman Underwood has been a leader on ever since she came to Congress. We got that done in the American Rescue Plan, but those enhanced subsidies expire. And we got to get those extended, and we got to do it in the Build Back Better agenda. Now, a leader on this, particularly someone who has been fighting so hard for this to close the Medicaid coverage gap, and has worked, bicamerally on this issue, had worked with Senator Warnock and Senator Ossoff and Senator Baldwin, and has worked with the Speaker and others, is the Majority Whip James Clyburn of the great state of South Carolina. Congressman Clyburn?
Thank you very much, Brad, and thanks to you, Lauren Underwood, for bringing us together today and your work on this very, very important issue. Now, I'm going to talk just a little bit about this whole Medicaid gap or coverage gap, but I want to thank you, Lauren, for your work on the American Rescue Plan, and I think that you will discuss a little more of that a little later on. I often think about the day that we got word of the Supreme Court's decision upholding the constitutionality of the Affordable Care Act. A lot of us were waiting for that decision with great anticipation, and we were in a meeting when the word came that the Supreme Court had upheld that. Everybody exploded with glee until we read the fine print. And then we read the decision. We saw that what the Supreme Court had done was also enhance states' abilities to come out from under the act. So I call it a sort of a states' rights decision. And, of course, a lot of states opted not to expand Medicaid, and today 12 states still have not expanded Medicaid, and one of those 12 happens to be my home state, of South Carolina, where 200,000 of my fellow South Carolinians are uninsured. 100,000 of them fall into this so-called coverage gap. And we have an opportunity today with this legislation to do something about that. I'm often reminded by staff of a story that I told when, well, really made a TV commercial out of it when I ran for Congress back in 1992. I tell the story of riding in a car with my dad one day when he swerved to go around a tree limb that was in the road ahead of us. And I just remarked that somebody ought to move that thing. My dad slammed on brakes, literally throwing me into the windshield, and looked at me and said, "Well," and I replied, "Well, what?" A bit startled. He said, "Well, aren't you somebody? Get out of the car and move the limb." I got out of the car and I moved the limb, and he never said another word to me for the next 25 or so miles until we got home. But it underscored a lesson that I needed to do something rather than calling upon somebody else to do it. And I think this so often up here that happens. But today we have an opportunity to do something about this, and we ought not wait on somebody else to do it. And so today, as we think about this legislation, this is an opportunity for us to address an issue that's very, very important. And I think it would be un-American of us to continue to do the things that are necessary to get our economy back going and leave these 200,000 South Carolinians out. Leave the Americans, the citizens in these 12 states, leave them behind as we go on to improve other parts of health care services in our country. So I'm really concerned about that. I believe this Build Back Better Act deals with that issue to the way it's sufficiently. And I'm hopeful that as we move forward, we will do what is necessary to bring those people into coverage. And with that, I'll yield back to you, Brad.
Congressman Clyburn, thank you. And let me just say that, you know, we have been watching this issue. You know, this was not firmly on the radar when Joe Biden was sworn in as president. It was not firmly on the radar when he spoke to Congress. It was just beginning to be discussed. Of course, it had been the incentives for these states to expand had been put in the American Rescue Plan. None of them took it,
right?
Because it's about the politics, not about not about the money. And I don't think any of us believe that have been advocating for this and working on this believe that it would be on the radar screen today if it wasn't for your advocacy, for your fighting, for your press work, for your talking about this issue in the caucus. And we're determined with your leadership to get something done. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
With that, I want to turn it over to Congresswoman Lauren Underwood. Lauren Underwood represents the 14th District of Illinois. She's on the Ways and Means Committee. She was a senior advisor at HHS. She's a registered nurse. She comes by this stuff in her soul and honestly and with experience as a nurse and as an administrator, as a congresswoman, as a representative of the people. And she, from the minute she was sworn in, she has been a leader on protecting and enhancing the Affordable Care Act. She introduced the legislation that was the basis for the extension of these expansion and enhancement of these subsidies in the and lower premiums in the American Rescue Plan, and she's fighting to get those extended. We'd like them to be permanent, but extended at least in the Build Back Better agenda. Congresswoman Underwood?
Well, good morning, and thank you all so much for joining today's press call. I am thrilled to be joining our Majority Whip of the House, Congressman Jim Clyburn, and thank you to Brad Woodhouse and the whole Protect Our Care team for hosting this call, and thank you to Karen and Hamali for sharing your healthcare stories. The Build Back Better Act is a historic legislative package that will lower taxes, tackle the climate crisis, and help families throughout my Northern Illinois district and Americans all across the country. Critically, the legislation is a transformative opportunity to permanently expand access to high-quality, affordable health care. Health care is a right, not a privilege, and we must advance universal coverage and health equity in the Build Back Better Act, continuing the progress that we made in the American Rescue Plan. Thanks to the two-year version of my Healthcare Affordability Act that was included in the American Rescue Plan, we've cut our nation's uninsured rate, we've provided substantial savings for individuals and families, and we've taken the most significant step towards health equity since the Affordable Care Act was signed into law. Through the advanced premium tax credit expansion that I championed, Marketplace enrollees are seeing savings of more than $40 per person per month, which is a 40% reduction in their monthly spending on healthcare, which means more money for groceries, school supplies, and essentials that families depend on. Median plan deductibles for new enrollees have dropped by nearly 90%, from $450 to $50. Half of eligible uninsured Hispanic adults and 45% of eligible uninsured Black adults are now able to find $0 premium plans. I mean, it's huge. And older adults have seen significant benefits. A Center on Budget and Policy Priorities report found that Americans between the ages of 55 and 64 who face premiums three times higher than younger people have experienced some of the largest savings. Okay, so what we are talking about has changed the healthcare landscape since we passed the American Rescue Plan. But if we fail to take action now and make the American Rescue Plan advanced premium tax credit expansion permanent, all of this progress will be wiped out in 2 years. Americans will lose the coverage now protected by, or once again face premiums that render coverage unaffordable and lead them to forego insurance altogether. The gains that we have made in closing coverage gaps in community will be reversed. The millions of people who might now have health insurance for the first time in their lives, and certainly in their adult lives, will once again lay awake at night wondering if they're one illness away from bankruptcy. Cannot afford to backtrack on the historic progress that we have made for the American people. We must make the advanced premium tax credit expansion from the American Rescue Plan permanent, and we must close the Medicaid coverage gap in this Build Back Better Act. We have a once-in-a-generation opportunity to make high-quality health care affordable and accessible to all. The American people are counting on us to get this done, and we must deliver. Thank you so much, and I'm looking forward to answering your questions later in today's call.
Great. Congresswoman Underwood, thank you, and thank you for your leadership on this, your tenacity in getting this done. I mean, you know, when you came to Congress, our fight was largely to protect the Affordable Care Act, prevent repeal, prevent sabotage. Now we have all the levers, and we have this opportunity to do so much more for affordable health care for the American people. And with all these levers, there's just really no excuse not to get it done. And thankfully, you are leading the charge. With that, I want to introduce Carrie Duran from New Hampshire. Carrie's a 50-year-old single mother of three girls, one of whom experiences Down syndrome and has significant medical needs. But Carrie is a beneficiary of Medicaid expansion. New Hampshire is a state that has expanded Medicaid, so her story would be relevant to those who could potentially benefit from closing the Medicaid coverage gap. Carrie?
Hi, thank you. Thank you so much for the opportunity to share my story with you today. My name is Carrie Duran, and I live in Wolfboro, New Hampshire. And as Mr. Woodhouse said, I'm a single mom to three amazing girls. Isabella and Marisol are 15, and they're in the 10th grade. Isabella plays soccer, and Marisol plays field hockey, and they're both honor students. My youngest daughter, Katie, is a vivacious 10-year-old in the 5th grade, and she's a dancer and a singer and loves to perform, and she also has the developmental disability of Down syndrome. I work part-time, and I'm a full-time student, and I also volunteer on several committees and boards for the state, local nonprofits, and my town, and I just joined our local PTO. I'm also a proud recipient of expanded Medicaid. As my youngest daughter's full-time caregiver, I represent many American families who have to choose between full-time employment and caring for loved ones. Katie's disability comes with some complex medical needs, and I coordinate doctor's appointments and specialist visits at three major hospitals for Katie, along with her weekly therapies, her medical equipment, and medications. And along with all of this, I'm working part-time, being a student, volunteering, caring for my other children. And as you can imagine, I'm one busy mom. And I need to be healthy to take care of my family, and I need health care in order to do this. Since being a mom, I have not been able to have employment which provided health insurance for me. There are so many American families who are experiencing the same situation as I am. So when my youngest daughter entered full-time school, I began working part-time. But this put me over the top of the benefits cliff that we're talking about that so many single mothers and families face. So I lost my Medicaid health benefits because I made too much money. I applied for health insurance through the marketplace, but I didn't make enough money to afford to pay for my own insurance. So for several years, I was just without. I was without insurance and without the financial means to pay for health care. This was very difficult and an unacceptable situation for anyone to be in. Thankfully, in my home state of New Hampshire in 2018, we passed the expanded Medicaid for working families, and thousands of Granite Staters have benefited. I no longer have to deny myself basic health care due to cost. And I'm now able to care for my family with preventative care and be my best healthy self and live my best life so that I can take care of my family. I would encourage any state which does not currently have Medicaid expansion to think of my story and to think of the importance of assisting lower-income families such as my own. I would also ask that you think about my daughter, Katie, who only 10 years old now, but as she grows up, I expect that she'll go to college and live on her own and have gainful employment. And even though she has a disability, she should still have the opportunity to make a living, live her best life, and take care of her health. Medicaid expansion has become a lifeline for me and my family, and will continue to be so for my daughter when she becomes an adult. Working mothers, caregivers, and persons with disabilities should never have to put their health last due to cost. And I urge you to help support by continuing to support ending the coverage gap and assist families to live healthy lives. And I thank you so much for the opportunity to share today.
Carrie, thank you, and your story is so important. I've always felt like if we could put stories like yours, force Republican governors, the leaders of Republican legislatures in these states to listen to stories like yours, maybe their hearts on this issue wouldn't be so hard. So thank you for that, and if you'll just hold on, there may be some questions for you when we get to the Q&A. So we have another storyteller on the ACA side, Himali Patel. Unfortunately, she woke up not feeling well this morning and couldn't join us. But Hamali is from Atlanta, and her story is a concrete example of what Congresswoman Underwood was talking about. Hamali and her brother owned five small retail businesses, and because of the struggle of the pandemic, they're down to one. It's a dry cleaning establishment. They had a disheartening drop in their income. Hamali has several multiple medical conditions, been getting her health insurance through the Georgia Exchange, but she was paying $400 a month. And of course, she'd had this large drop in income. But after the American Rescue Plan passed and the ACA tax credits were expanded and enhanced, her premium dropped to zero. So what an important story, and just the type of person that these enhanced tax credits are meant to help. And that's why we have got to make them permanent, as President Biden has called for in the Build Back Better agenda. With that, Whitney, I think we're ready to take questions.
Great. At this time, if anyone has questions for any of our speakers, please press *3 on your phone to enter our Q&A queue. Again, if you have a question for any of our speakers, please press *3 on your phone to enter our queue. And we're going to give folks just a minute here. All right, our first question is going to come from Jonathan Cohn at HuffPost.
Hi, thanks for doing Hi there. Thank you for doing this call. I think this is a question probably for Representative Clyburn, if he's still on the line, or Representative Underwood, or both. There's a limited number of funds, it looks like, so a lot of Democratic priorities are competing with one another, and it sounds like this is coming down to money for Medicaid gap and ACA extension versus money for Medicare dental. And I was wondering if either one of you wanted to make a case for, if you have to choose, or there has to be more in one than the other, why the dollar going into Medicaid gap or ACA extension should be at higher priority than a money dollar going into Medicare dental?
Well, I think there's always a battle of where you place your priorities. And I think that those of us who believe that closing this gap in these 12 states, or, well, the Medicaid expansion making up for it in these 12 states, it's a very important thing to do. Doesn't mean we don't support what's being done on behalf of Medicare. But I would ask people to really think about how low-income families should be expected to go to work and do the kinds of things families do, as we've heard here today. That should be sacrificed as we add on to services for the billionaires. We don't means test Medicare, which means pretty wealthy people will be getting more dental care and more vision care, while poor people will be denied. I don't know that that's a real good choice. So I think that we need to take a look at what we're doing here and place our emphasis on that which is really needed. And that's why I've been pushing for us to target resources to the needy. If you're making $300,000 or $400,000 a year and we were means testing Medicare, then that would be a problem. That would not be a problem, but we don't.
And so I think we have to really take a hard look at these programs and what they do to families.
Great. Thank you, Congressman.
Can I add one thing? This is Lauren Underwood.
Yeah, go right ahead.
I think it's really important to remember that, you know, the Affordable Care Act passed in 2010, and the very first opportunity that we had to pass any kind of improvement to the ACA, to pass any kind of enhancement to the ACA, was with the American Rescue Plan that was signed into law in March. And so with that first opportunity, we decided to lower out-of-pocket costs for Americans. Now that we have another opportunity, I want to make sure we're putting this in context. We are proposing finishing the job by making sure that every low-income American has the possibility for health care coverage through Medicaid expansion, right? Keeping the promise of the ACA. We have the opportunity to make sure that the American people know with certainty that their premium price is not going to go up at the end of 2022. Right, that we have the opportunity to make these expanded tax cuts permanent, and we're paying for it by allowing Medicare to negotiate prescription drug prices, making sure that those Medicare beneficiaries can afford their medications. And so I don't see this as a game of winners and losers or choosing between critical federal health care programs. I think that we have the opportunity with this kind of transformational pay for, right, the Medicare drug price negotiation, to take care of the American people and expand their access to health care.
That's perfect. I couldn't agree more. And the bigger and bolder we go on Medicare drug negotiation, the more that can be done on those issues you just raised, Congresswoman. And I want to thank Congressman Clyburn, who I think has had to drop for another meeting. We do have several questions in the queue, so Congresswoman Underwood, if you could hold on, we'll go to the
next
one.
I'm here.
Thank you so much.
Our next question is going to come from Ricardo Zaldivar at the Associated Press.
Hi, yeah, Ricardo Alonso Zaldivar with the AP. Thank you for taking my question. And it's for Representative Underwood. And I would like you, what I wanted to ask is, it seems as there's a bit of contention between House Democrats and Senate Democrats over the Medicare dental benefit. The House bill would start in 2028, and for some of those on the Senate side, that's insufficient. It should be accelerated, should start sooner. Can you comment on that? And also, a question for you, many of the seniors who would be getting the dental benefit are not rich. You probably, those who do have money, have no problem paying for their dental care. So it would be kind of like an overlapping population of people, low-income people as well. So.
Sure. Been about sort of two things at play. One is the challenges for CMS to begin offering a new benefit program, right? Making the relevant changes to the Medicare program, working with the providers, establishing the benefit and the time required through their regulatory process to do that, right? It is difficult, right, for these agencies that aren't necessarily known at being agile to kind of rapidly, after the legislation is enacted, roll out new programs. So that's one concern. The other is cost related. And I think that the tension that you're describing is likely a mix of both. Now, to my knowledge, we have not heard from the agency, CMS, about the minimum time that would be required for them to roll out this type of new benefit. However, you probably know, and many on the call know, that prior to running for Congress, I did work at HHS to implement the ACA for 4.5 years. And we know how important it is for the American people to see an impact as quickly as possible. And when we make promises and pass legislation to suggest that the American people would be able to take advantage of a new benefit like dental coverage in Medicare, it is hard for people in my community to wait 7 years to experience that benefit. Okay? So my feedback to my colleagues has always been, let's try to make sure that the American people and beneficiaries can feel the impact of the policy changes as soon as possible.
Couldn't agree more with that. Okay, Whitney, any more questions?
Yep, our next question is going to come from Jennifer Harbicorn at the LA Times.
Hi. Hi, Brad. My question, Congresswoman Underwood, following up on Jonathan's first question on if you guys are faced with constrained resources, there's some discussion about doing a short-term filling of the Medicaid gap that would only last a couple of years. Can I get your thoughts on that?
Yeah, the problem with these short-term expansions is that, you know, we have a tremendous opportunity right now with Democratic majorities in the House and Senate and a Democratic president that are all aligned in shared values. And we know that congressional Republicans have demonstrated no interest in protecting Americans' access to health care and expanding Medicaid. And, well, at least, let me rephrase. Congressional Republicans have not embraced Medicaid expansion. I'll say that, and I would appreciate you using that revision. And I think that, you know, while we have the opportunity to do this work, I think we should take advantage of it because it is a assumption that is made that several years down the line we will have the political opportunity to do it again. And I don't think the American people appreciate, you know, folks taking that risk. We cannot be cavalier with people's health care.
Thank you, Congresswoman. Whitney, any more questions?
Yep. Our next question is going to come from Tammy Luby at CNN.
Hi, thank you for taking my question and holding this, sort of building on some of the previous questions. Since ideally the legislation would be able to accomplish all three goals of making the ACA subsidies permanent, expanding the Medicare benefits, and closing the Medicaid gap, but with the constraints and the reality that seems to be developing, what are the discussions internally about what can be pared back or let go in order to salvage the package overall?
Right. I mean, obviously, negotiations are ongoing. You saw yesterday some key senators meeting directly with the president, and I'm sure that these critical healthcare topics have come up in discussion. I think that what we know for sure is that you can't build back better without protecting folks' healthcare and lowering out-of-pocket healthcare costs. Period. And so I think that the commitment to taking action continues. The commitment to ensuring that these provisions are paid for continues. And, you know, I am certainly not giving up on the opportunity to make sure that we are, you know, keeping these premium tax credits in the bill, and they need to be made permanent. It's a popular policy, something the American people understand. And since the American Rescue Plan, over 3 million Americans have signed up for coverage, taking advantage of these new lower costs, the new lower rates. So, you know, I think this is a win-win, and but obviously it's an active negotiation.
Thank you, Congresswoman. Let me just add to this kind of theme of questions. One thing that will make these choices less hard is to go big on drugs. And, you know, not to scale back the savings that, you know, are realized through the provision that's in the House reconciliation package. Those savings won't be able to make every one of these provisions that we're talking about permanent, but the choices will be even made harder if pharma gets its way and either, you know, eliminates the negotiation provision or gets it scaled back. And there's no reason to do it. I mean, they put that provision in 20 years ago just to be able to rip off taxpayers. I mean, literally Medicare can't negotiate for lower drug prices, the largest purchaser of drugs in the country. So if we go big on drugs, then these choices are less hard. There still have to be hard choices, but they will be less hard. Whitney, do we have more questions?
Yep. Our next question is going to come from Rachel Rubin at the Washington Post.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. So obviously the House had put forward its proposal to do a permanent Medicaid expansion fix, and as others have mentioned, that could get pared back in the Senate. And I was wondering if you could speak a little bit more to the dynamics in the Senate. For instance, there's three Democratic senators from expansion states, and whereas there's more members in general from, sorry, three Democratic senators from non-expansion states, whereas there's more in the House. Does that make it more of a lift in the Senate in terms of making this permanent versus a temporary federal fix?
Yeah, I really can't speak to that. I've not been involved in those.
Okay. Whitney, I think we have time for a couple more questions. Congresswoman, are you okay on time?
Yeah, totally fine.
Okay. We may not get to everybody. Great. We have a lot in the queue, but let's see what we can get through in the next couple minutes.
Our next question is going to come from Alex Ruoff at Bloomberg Government.
Thank you, Congresswoman, for taking the time. I wanted to ask, sorry to keep putting these questions. One of the things I wanted to ask was, you know, I think it's, at this point, a lot of leadership has acknowledged the size of the bill will shrink, or at least some of these healthcare priorities kind of have to get less, you know, the cost has to go down. In your opinion, like, where can you take that from? You know, when you talk of, you know, like Energy and Commerce and Ways and Means have put together like a trillion-plus package, and their healthcare, you know, the drug pricing will cover it all. You know, if you were in charge of this process, where would you shrink it to get it down to, you know, to pare it down a little bit? You know, like where can we afford to and still get all the health policy objectives you want to hit?
Yeah, so let's just be really clear that there were a small handful, and not a handful is even an exaggeration. There's like three people in the House caucus that are not supportive of Medicare negotiating drug prices. We have demonstrated as House Democrats that we are eager to put H.R. 3 into law and to extend that authority to Medicare. And so I think that the scaling back of the bill can happen while still maintaining our healthcare priorities. When we look at the Build Back Better Act and some of the larger areas of disagreement with some key Democratic senators, I've not heard them call out healthcare. So I'm not going to sit here on the phone and, you know, start offering up things to be cut. No way. We want our healthcare priorities in the bill are popular. These priorities will save lives, and you cannot build back better if the American people don't have health care coverage. Cannot happen. And so let's just be very clear. We have the ability to pay for it. Enjoys broad support among House Democrats. It was included in the Ways and Means markup. It is my expectation that it will be in whatever comes to the floor.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Congresswoman. And let me just amplify the popularity of the Medicare drug negotiation. We just did two different polling projects. One national survey of heart research showed 94% of the American people support Medicare drug negotiation, and 2/3 or more of the American people do not buy pharma's scare tactics on why it will limit innovation and research and development, which is not true. I mean, it's just not true. It's a scare tactic. And then we did a modeling project with Data for Progress that showed in virtually every congressional district in the country, the support for Medicare drug negotiation is 90% or better. And the last thing I will say, and Congresswoman, you don't need to react to this. It has always been curious to me why every dollar of health care spending has to be offset with a dollar of health care savings. That is not the approach to other items in the Build Back Better agenda. Those items are going to be funded through tax increases on corporations and the wealthy. So I don't know why health care does not benefit from any of those paperwork. But in any event, that's that is a subject for another day. Okay, we're gonna keep going. The theme of these questions is quite similar, but let's see, Whitney, if we have any more.
Yep, our next question is going to come from Peter Sullivan at The Hill.
Hi, thanks. My question was answered already, so I'm good. Thanks.
Okay, thank you, Peter. Appreciate that. Whitney, any other questions?
Yep. Next, we are going to hear from Mary Ellen McIntyre at CQ Roll Call.
Hey, thanks for doing this. I just wanted to follow up on something that Congressman Clyburn was saying. So I'm not sure, Congresswoman Underwood, if this is something you can speak to, but was curious kind of what he was saying about Medicare expanding benefits. You know, that's not means tested, so those benefits would help people who, you know, aren't necessarily the same target population as the Medicare expansion population. As you guys are sort of considering, you know, how to potentially pare back some of the healthcare spending if the top line number does fall, I mean, is means testing expansion of benefits of Medicare for dental, vision, and hearing something that is on the table at all?
Yeah, that's not something that I'm actively considering and certainly not advocating for.
Okay.
We've got time for one more question today, That question is going to come from Jesse Hellman at Modern Healthcare.
Hi, sorry, my question was answered already. Thanks.
Okay, well, perfect. Well, that was quite a lot of questions, a lot of reporter interest in this call, and we certainly appreciate it. With no more questions in the queue, Congresswoman, I just want to turn it over to you if you have a closing thought.
Yeah, so this is obviously kind of an intense time, and we are remaining laser focused on the opportunity to deliver for the American people and lower their out-of-pocket healthcare costs. When I ran for office in 2018, what I heard over and over and over and over again were people couldn't afford their healthcare, they couldn't afford their prescription drugs, and they were asking us to help. That's it. We have the opportunity to do that right now. We have the opportunity to pass the Build Back Better Act. We have the opportunity to extend the promise of Medicaid expansion to the entire country by making sure that those states that were not included or chose not to, be involved in 2012, now those Americans have the opportunity for affordable health care. And I'm excited to work with my colleagues to get this done. So thank you very much. And feel free to reach out to my office if y'all have more questions.
Great. Thank you, Congresswoman Underwood. I can't express to you how grateful we are for your leadership on this. It really does take a village to get all this done, and you are a leader in that village. Carrie, I want to thank you. Obviously, thank Majority Whip Clyburn, who had to leave. I just want to say we are going to continue to fight. We are doing healthcare actions every single day in support of the healthcare elements we talked about today, including one that we've alluded to and talked about, which is the prescription drug benefit, which is very key to tying all this together. I've watched this process, when we were passing the Affordable Care Act, and I don't know how many times it was declared dead or People were doomy and gloomy, and there's a lot going on right now, but there's a path. And I trust Speaker Pelosi. I trust President Biden. I trust Senator Schumer, and I certainly trust Congresswoman Underwood and Congressman Clyburn and their Democratic colleagues to get Build Back Better agenda passed, and that they recognize that the health care elements are the tip of the spear, the most important, the most popular, and the most politically salient, and we simply have to get that done. So thanks, everybody, for joining us, and we will be in touch soon.
Thank you.